fit together, and I cannot believe, and we were talking about this very early this morning when I came on at 6 o'clock, another shooting in Hartford. Young people witnessed it over by the Children's Hospital.
And Brad, in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chairs this morning, we have a full studio beginning with the Reverend Henry Brown. We have Henrietta Beckman. She is president of Mothers United Against Violence. The treasurer of MUAV is Bishop Jim Curry. He is here. Deborah Davis is with us. Pastor Sam Saylor. And you and Pastor Sam go back a long way.
Over 30 years.
All in studio.
We can give you all kinds of stories,
Dad. Oh, yeah.
Some of them on the air.
Yes.
So, Reverend Brown, let's begin with you. Another shooting last night in Hartford, and it came just a mile or so away from where the mayor was holding a town hall meeting to talk about the violence in our city. So you take it from here.
Yeah, Dan, unfortunate. We did suffer the ninth homicide of the year by guns here in Hartford. We was present with the mayor over at the YMCA before we left and went on the television show, and we got the word of another shooting. And unfortunate, a 29-year-old man was shot dead in front of his two kids on Washington Street in front of Dunkin' Donuts. And it was frightening because it happened directly across the street from the Children's Hospital. And it created a panic mode because the police presence that was on the scene. I want to send my condolences out to those families that are affected by that violence. We don't know what perpetrated it, but we do know that that's a loss of life again in the city of Hartford. And unfortunate, it happened with two kids and Luke being present. And that's a disturbing thing about it, you wish that people would keep our children out of this type of stuff. We just lost a 15-year-old kid to gun violence. So, it's disturbing. It's upsetting. That means that we have to go out again and offer our love and compassion to another family that have been affected by the senseless killings that are going on in Hartford.
You know, what would you say is the primary reason for this? Now, we were talking earlier about families, and it doesn't seem that there are a lot of males that are connected to the families now, and that the mothers are responsible. Could that be one of the big problems?
I mean, there's some disconnect with the male in the family. We all know that's obvious, but I don't think that's a defining moment of why these shootings are happening. I think it's a lot of things that systematically imposed on our people. That's the hunger, that's the homelessness, that's the lack of job, that's the lack of quality education. So we have so many other things that are perpetrating these crimes. And I really believe, and like I said last night, I'm tired of people talking with no action. We need to implement some plan to stop this. And that take all of us from the mayor on down to be involved in this. You got to get the mayor involved. You got to get the church involved. You got to get all your politicians involved. You got to get the community, in particular, the community involved, so we can come up with resolution to change the perception that people have about our community. I want to say this, too. We have 99% of people in Hartford good citizens. You know, we know that. We don't want people to think that there's thugs and hooligans living in Hartford. That's not true. But we do have that criminal element, and we need to abolish that criminal element. And that's what we need to do. And the only way we can do that is, like last night, we had these forums. We can't just come to the forum, Brad, and talk about the problem. We need to say we have a problem. Let's put our heads together and fix it. Because we can stay at the table 3 or 4 days. But let's stay at the table 3 or 4 days till we find some solution. Just don't come and talk and then turn your back and walk out. And then we have another meeting 3 or 4 weeks later. That's not acceptable. We've got to do better than that.
Henrietta, you have a story related to our audience, and we're going to ask you to get right into that microphone. Henrietta Beckman, President, Mothers United Against Violence.
My story began 15 years ago when my son Randy was shot on Barber Street. He had a 4-month-old son who's 15 now. He's very much like his father. He's outgoing, and he's loving, and he's a very understanding, kind person. and he has high hopes. He wants to be a basketball star. But the violence in our neighborhood, it's been going on ever since my children were young. And even back then, you know, as a mother, you have to be protective and be vigilant of where your children are and who it is that they're hanging out with. And a lot of these problems today is the children, they need some guidance. They need support. And to me, the mothers probably don't have enough support in raising these children because they don't have jobs and the education, they're dropping out of school at an alarming rate. All these things contribute to the things that are going on in our neighborhoods, and we all have a part in helping to control this. It doesn't matter what neighborhood you are from or what color you are. These are children who need us, and we need to be there for them.
Henrietta, what is it you think that is not motivating these kids to stay in school?
For some kids, it seems like there's not enough opportunities. They're not being encouraged enough. And we're not in the schools, but I can hear children say, you know, that sometimes it's not presented to them to be productive, to be successful. Like, you can feel when someone is not really in your corner. So if these opportunities aren't presented to them, and somebody's there saying, I care about you, you know, we're going to be there step by step with you, they tend to fall off and they get with their friends or they get with the wrong influences.
You know, when we talk about this, and the friend of mine right over here,
Pastor Sam Saylor.
Sam, we go back 30 years, and when we come back, I want Sam to go back and tell us, you hear what some of the stories that we have that happened that far back, because they are dramatic, dramatic stories. Okay, right now we're going to check with Sam Saylor. He goes back some 30 years with me, and I remember the old Hartford Hotel, some of the big problems we had during the snowstorms with the sisters and everything else. Sam, as you look back, and I knew you were coming in here this morning, and I was so happy that you could make it, because we have been together on all of this. As you look back, and as I look back during those times, why are we at the point that we're at right now?
Well, Brad, first of all, good morning, and thank you for having us. I'm glad to be here with my team, the Mothers United Against Violence, and the work that they've been doing for a long time in the city. And we go back, you're right, back to the 1983, I remember, working at Center City Churches and the director of the youth program there. And we encountered that big issue with the Hartford Hotel, with all those poor people and homeless people in there. And you champion that cause for those people. When I think what happened, they were doing some excavation or trying to put the Civic Center or do some parking garage there, and it basically broke the foundation down to the hotel, and those people had to leave out, and you went full blast trying to get them the help you did, and you've been doing that for years, and, you know, being a champion for my cause when people didn't believe in me, you stood up for me, and I want to thank you for that. But, you know, where we are today is where we are 30 years ago, Brad. We live in a city that is a magnet for the people who can't afford to live in the other 168 towns and cities in Connecticut, who can't afford to live in the more affluent communities. The cities are the magnet. People come. The homeless come. That population that we've been championing for decades now, they're continuing to come to Hartford. So the poverty on top of poverty, entrenched poverty, the sense of hopelessness continues to happen in our community. Yes, as you asked Ms. Beckman about, you know, why are kids failing in school? We don't have a large number of our kids failing, but there are kids who are failing through the system because the system has failed them. This last 15-year-old boy died. I worked with him, and I know how the system failed him. And he ended up, you know, like most kids, lacking what we call the early hero syndrome. No one early enough in his life, when his brain and character is impressionable, the first 7, 8 years of his life, where their brain is impressionable, there's no heroes in your life. So you grow up with the heroes in your community on the streets, and it was mostly the thugs or the folk that out there trying to prey on the youth and to prey on their lack of
drugs
hope.
Is
right,
too.
Right, because it's an industry.
Yeah.
It's a major industry. We've known through time that the military has used it to finance wars, and folk have used that economy for all kinds of reasons. People are still using. There are people who are affluent over it because of the drugs. So, but yet what you're seeing is the sediment that happens in our community, sediment of crime, the sediment of impoverishment, the sediment of hopeless lives, broken lives. You know, some of these children, their families are hooked on that stuff, or they're hooked on hopelessness. We trying to turn a blind eye. As long as it stays in Hartford, it stays in the certain communities. Like, everybody's appalled that a man got shot in front of a Hartford hospital, in front of Children's Hospital. Well, you know, they should be equally appalled to the kid who got shot on the back stairs on Garden Street, or equally appalled to, as my son got killed in a park over in Sheldon Oak, or equally appalled to the kid who got shot on Nelson Street or Weston Street or all areas, because there's no sacred ground in Hartford. The only sacred ground is a safe ground, and we're losing our sacred grounds, because there's no sacred ground in Hartford. You know, it's just a matter of time, just like in Newtown. There's, you know, evil has told us there's no sacred ground. Evil will approach you wherever you are and broke your bubble of sense of security and let you know that we all are in this fight together. Newtown woke up to reality that they're in this fight with us against proliferation of guns. We got guns coming out of community. Almost every kid seems to have a gun.
Where are they getting the guns?
Yeah.
Well, we don't manufacture them in Harvard. Then Colt Industries don't manufacture guns anymore, right? And so they're coming in by the truckload. We have straw purchases. We have people selling guns out of the back of the cars, and we don't see any major.
Is that right?
Breaks.
Selling them out of the back of cars.
Back of cars coming into us, even though we got strong laws in the government, and our governor really went to bat to really put these laws since Newtown. But we still have an issue with shotguns. We still have an issue with the pistols coming into our communities, coming from areas around the country, in our urban centers across the country, being sold, knowing that the sense of power that a kid gives a gun. Power, gun gives you power, so it allows you to say things and do things in your community. Then fear causes you to want to go and find a gun, because now you got to live in this environment. You got to circumnavigate the streets, you know, so you want some protection, because you know the police can't get there soon enough. You know, so the first responders that we talked about yesterday on the show, Ben Brown, are our children. These kids, they were the first responders. They responded to the trauma and hopelessness of watching their father get killed yesterday. The other kids, they're affected by the trauma of daily, almost 8 to 9 shootings, well, not killings, but more than that, in shootings in this year so far. The trauma that is causing into our children is something that we have to address. The professionals know that our kids are getting a disservice with this trauma that's being put on their lives. And we're not getting the help that we knew. We get in major shootings, get all kinds
what
of
kind of help
out.
Now? What do we need now?
Well, the shootings in Orlando, the shootings in Newtown, the shootings in the major shootings, those people get money. Even if you weren't shot in Orlando, you got at least $25,000 to deal with your psychological disposition because you were there. Our kids that fall on the street, the parents have to have insult to the injury of losing a child, because now they can't bury them. You know, and then you got to go through whether they were involved in a crime before you can get any money from victim services. We got $20 million from victim services in Connecticut, and we don't even know where that money's going. In
really?
$20
million. $20
million
in where
we don't
going?
Know. No accountability of where that money is spent.
Wow.
It's not spent on counseling for our mothers and fathers who find themselves, right, to no fault of their own, in a deep, dark hole, to the point where they have to seek medicine or seek counsel and help. And I'm telling you, I didn't know that. I didn't know what Reverend Brown, Mother Violence, were really entrenched in. I would go to their rallies. I would support Reverend Brown because it was a thing to do. I was doing my stuff with the other children and doing what I do. But I didn't fully understand what he's doing. I know it was important. But when I got involved and came, I wanted to get up. He was on Washington Street, in fact. A lady got bludgeoned to death, and I saw the family. He had them all huddled there, and he was talking to them. I was looking to their faces. What are we doing out here in this parade of pain? What are we saying to these people? We're not making a difference. Look at the hopelessness on their face, the hurt on their face. And I told Reverend Brown and that crowd, I'm getting out of this parade of pain. I'm not coming to any more of these rallies because it's not effective. I don't know what we're doing out here. And then 2 weeks later, I get a call saying my son was shot in the back. lying dead on Sheldon Street in Hartford, and I got enveloped in this hole. I got enveloped in this experience.
How many years ago was this?
It's 4 years.
4 years.
October 20th, 2012. 20 years old, shot by in the back by a 20-year-old, becoming the 20th victim in the city of Hartford. Number 20. Yes. And it's, ever since then, God has allowed me to see what how deep the hole is that these victims, these living victims, fall into or are pulled into. It's like a black hole. You really got to fight to get your way out.
Sam, you know, I got to tell you something. You have not changed. You are the same person that I met over 30 years ago, and we were going through the same problems at the hotel in Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
The same problem, and what a crime that is, and we still have not found an answer.
30 years ago, I remember you talking on a show about drugs, you know, and our kids march against drugs and stuff, and here we are, the drugs are still the ruler of a lot of the pain and suffering that we have today.
Absolutely. Reverend Saylor. You know, when we talk about the drug and the impact that drugs have on our community, a lot of the problem is because the people from the suburban areas are the ones supplying, they need these drugs. And the candy factory is Hartford. And the people that come from the suburban areas, they know where to come to Hartford and get the drugs. Many of those folks bring guns and trade it in for the drugs. A lot of them come in. If they weren't buying the drugs in our community, our kids won't be dying.
Are these these legal gun owners who use their legality in order to go out and legally purchase guns
and then sell them
in the city?
We have had some time where dentists, doctors will come in because they had this habit. And see, that's another thing. Back in the day when it was black people that were addicted to all this drugs and stuff, it was, you're an addict. But now it's the reverse itself, and now that it's in the suburban community, it's an epidemic. And see, these are some of the things that are influencing our youth because they see things, you know, and they want things, you know, outside of the community. And you know, if you take a kid that that's hollering food on his table, you know, and you talk to this kid every day about, look, you need to go to school and get an education, but when he walk out his door, he see this yellow tape, and that's another problem. We had that yellow tape syndrome. You know, many of these kids see it, you know, and they want to get out. They like the nice thing that the kids in the suburban area had, you know, the nice cars, you know, the nice clothes and everything. So when they go out and they see these things on TV, but they walk outside of their home, that's this fear of grief hanging over their heads, and they can't get out. So drugs is the way out for them. You know, they know that they get the fast money. So if your child gets the fast money, it takes them away from what his real potential is. You know, going to school to get a quality education. Because I want these things now. I don't want to wait because I see other people that have these things. And say something else that Reverend Saylor said, too, that's true, is that right now we had a 4- and 6-year-old that saw this murder yesterday. I'm betting you right now there's no one providing counseling for those kids right now. These are the type of things that happen in our community.
Was this brought up at the meeting last night? $20 million, where's all this going?
Well, the mayor listed off about $8 to $10 million that is spent at Eyepiece of the Pie down in South Blue Hills, some works of trying to give our kids jobs and deal with our kids around their academics and stuff. But that's just only a drop in the kind of money that is spent in Hartford. Hartford spends about $80 to $100 million. In youth programs or youth-related programs. And if you tie in DCF services and state services that spend the money on the premises that they're helping our children, our poor children in our urban areas, then you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars with this kind of effect that you're getting, you know, where the communities continue dealing with this. We have our debt, and people say they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Well, they live in those communities. That's where their economy scales can afford to live there. It's not the wrong place, the wrong time. That's where they live there. That's where they breathe and they grow up there. We just got a community that doesn't see any growth. Brad, you know North Hartford. You know Barber Street back in the day before the riot, Javen Drugstore, all those places.
Unbelievable.
Barber Street has never seen an economic renewal since the
I remember the first day I went in there.
Yes. Haven't seen a revival in years. years. Park Street has, Farmington Avenue has, Maple Avenue has, but Park Street and those neighborhoods have not seen any economic revival at all. And people who are suffering from these deaths, we heard about the 15-year-old that got killed, right? Sad situation. Sad situation. But what isn't talked about is the 85-year-old lady who hall in which he got shot, heard the guns. To this day, she is unable to rest based on her parent, her children's comments that she is shaken by hearing not the pow pow, but the boom boom. When you're that close to guns, it is not a pow pow. It's not a bang bang. It shakes and rocks your life.
Okay, we're going to come up on a break. We want to get Bishop Jim in. We want to
8 o'clock. And my dear friends, what you are hearing this morning, you are hearing the voices who need help. The voices that need help, and this is the reason that Dan and myself gathered them in our studio. And one of the reasons I believe that this is covered over is because there are not enough people that are doing the voicing. And when I say the voicing, telling you and let you hear the voices yourself, and then you, of course, will be motivated. That's what I believe.
Again, Brad, joining us in studio, Reverend Henry Brown. We have Henrietta Beckman, President, Mothers United Against Violence. Deborah Davis is with us, Pastor Sam Saylor. We have Bishop Jim Curry. And, Deborah, I know we haven't heard from you yet today, so you have some comments and stories to relate. So go ahead.
Absolutely, Dan. I am one of the parents that probably sat back and said it could never happen to me. And I am one of the parents that said, no, not my child. I don't know if you know, but I'm a past economic development director for this town. But I lived in Hartford, and I have noticed that, and echoing the same sentiments that Sam and Reverend has mentioned, the blight is still prevalent. The blight breeds the criminal element as well. And if this is a 30 and a 40-year run, just as Brad has mentioned, that will continue to happen for the next 30 years. So eliminating the blight and the conditions of individuals that live in impoverished areas is definitely number one, because we need individuals like ourselves at every level to be watchdogs, to be individuals that are out there on the front line, keeping an eye on what's going on with families. And so you would never know as a parent who your child is engaging with. You pray and you hope that that child is of the same mind like that you raised your child to be. And as I said last evening, that we pour everything into our child just as other individuals do. We give them a sense of hope. We provide the education for them. We give them a sense of direction. We want them to attend college. I have a daughter that is a lawyer now. I did not think that this could ever happen to me, because I gave them everything that they needed to have, and then some. And so when my son, Mom, I want to go skateboarding. Yes, wasn't very prevalent, but I found a place for him to go to in New Britain. Mom, I want to go ice skating. Yes, but I found a place for him to go in Simsbury. I had to take my children everywhere else in order to get the kinds of activities, the kinds of enjoyment that they needed. But instead, our children have to walk the streets. Instead, our children have to be afraid to ride their bicycles, afraid to be jumped, afraid to be robbed. That is a sad testimony 30 to 40 years later, as Sam has echoed, everyone has echoed the same thing. And yes, Barber Street is still the same, because we continue to do plan after plan after plan after plan, and we never address the issues. Everyone in the world comes in and they pick up a dollar out of City of Hartford, but we can never get those funds directed to where they need to go. And this is the call to action. Because if we want our children to have an activity ground, a playground, if we want our children to have a game location where they can go and play games and videos, they shouldn't have to go all the way out to Dave and Buster's in Manchester. They should be able to go to some of these places close in their area. And then they have to travel even just to go roller skating all the way out to Vernon. And I remember coming here and I said to myself, where are the resources? So now it is time for us to take a major stand. It goes beyond just losing my child. my whole impetus for doing this is because I do not want the next generation to see what we've seen as mothers. We want our children to grow up. We want them to be the person that they want to be. My son wanted to be a veterinarian. He was so stimulated by marine biologist work. He was so stimulated by that. And yes, he knew how to rap. He was really good at what he did. And that was an activity for them. That was something that kept them alive as well. So we have to speak to our children. We have to speak to our parents. We have to engage community with the parents and the families. Because just as I raised my son and Mrs. Beckman raised her son and Reverend Sam raised his son to be someone, the next door neighbor may not have had the same sentiments. That's what we're up against. That's what we need to address.
I want to get Bishop Jim here. Bishop Jim Curry, go ahead.
23 years ago this week, Marcelina Delgado was shot as she slept in the back seat of her father's car in Charter Oak. A Hispanic child killed because the car of her father was misunderstood to be the car of a rival gang. We had a moment in 1994 where this horrible tragedy could have tipped us over as a community to say no more. Enough is enough. And for a couple weeks, that happened. And then we went back to our regular understanding. We did not have the idea that this is life and death for every single member, not just of Hartford, not just Hartford residents, but it's a life and death situation for all of us in this greater Hartford area. We didn't take that opportunity. On July 4th, 2000, Takara Gaston was shot in her backyard in a family party in the crossfire of two gangs. By God's grace, she has survived. At the West Indian Day Parade in 2008, Tariq Marquez was shot, others also. And Tariq has had to go through incredible rehabilitation, but he is now a young man of great strength and great courage. Those also could have been turning points for us as a community to say, this is a life and death issue. We must keep focused as families, as neighborhoods, and as city, and as region. In 2012, I had the experience, 2013 actually, a few weeks after the shooting of Newtown, I had the experience of being in a large group of leaders from across Connecticut talking about this issue of gun violence. And there were two men sitting together. One of them was Sam Saylor, and one was the father of a child who had been killed in Sandy Hook. And there was some tension in their body language because of the different situations where violence had hit them and their families. But by God's grace again, they realized that the tears of the families in Newtown are the same as the tears of the families in Hartford. And that allowed us to have a new connection across the divides that are true in Connecticut, the divides of race, of class, of gender, most especially the divide of geography. We are so isolated. And we don't understand that it's a life and death issue for me. I live in New Haven. Hartford's situation is a life and death issue for me. Our situation in New Haven is a life and death issue for Sam and Henry and Henrietta. We have to have that kind of intensity, or we're going to continue to have these horrific,
absolutely,
and tragedy isn't the right word, because tragedy is random.
Mm-hmm.
This is the confrontation of the forces of evil that we need to realize we all have to be in working against.
Bishop Curry, hold that thought, and this is such a big thing what you're saying. We do have some business we have to transact.
I know.
Bishop Curry, hold that thought. I think we have a
He went over to a desk drawer, and he pulled out of the desk drawer these envelopes, okay? And he said, this is Johnny B. Good. That's what he called the envelope. Opened up the envelope. There was a rat that big, dead, okay? 15 of them. 15 of them he had that day, he showed me, at the Bellevue Square Boys Club. And everything was locked up. Everything was chained to desks and stuff. And these were young kids who were learning to be fighters. One turned out, Marlon Starling, to be a champion. In that, I mean, that was then. And I'll tell you something right now. If you look around, what you're saying, Sam, what the rest of you are saying, it hasn't changed that much.
I want to go back to... go ahead.
Well, Brad, you know Stowe Village, right?
Of course.
You know Stowe Village isn't Stowe Village any longer, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's home ownership.
That's right. Right.
Since they've had home ownership, we haven't had a vigil in Stowe Village. We haven't had a massive shooting in Stowe Village. What happened? Stowe Village is still around Stowe Village. We've had vigils all around it, but in Stowe Village proper, no one is dying.
Would you say Stowe Village is a success?
Yes, it has to be a success.
Yeah.
So Christmas, when the lights are on, there's no major crimes reported out of there. Home ownership, a value of who you are.
That's
and
what
where
it
you
is
live.
Now.
And when you have no value and you're living in houses, less than 25% of our homes, housing, dwellings in Hartford is owned by people. Less than 25%. It's owned by people. So we have low ownership. We're the lowest in Connecticut of a home ownership in all states and cities, cities and towns. So people aren't owning. Other people are owning us. Other people tell us where to live, how to live. They live outwards and own, and we got to pay rent when people can afford to own their own. So you give people ownership, you give them value, they buy into it. What's the miracle of Stowe Village where there's nobody's getting killed or shot there?
The American dream.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Bishop Curry, I want to go back to something you said before. Do the people, I don't think they understand, but do the people in suburbia have an idea of what it's like to live in a city?
Yes and no. I'm afraid that the primary image is one that we get from fictional TV rather than getting to know the people around this table. One of the things that the partnership of Newtown Action Alliance and Mothers United Against Violence has done is starting to have the conversations across that difference. Because I think you're right. Suburbanites come into the city for work and leave.
Yes.
And we've not created, or actually we've lost over the last 50 years, the sense that there is a united responsibility for the life of the wider community.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought again.
5:54, 6 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock.
Brad, joined in studio by the Reverend Henry Brown, Henrietta Beckman, Bishop Jim Curry, Deborah Davis, Pastor Sam Saylor, Mothers United Against Violence, talking about what happened in Hartford. Bishop Curry, I want to go back to something here where Keon Huff, 15-year-old teenager, fatally shot, 89-year-old woman in the apartment where the shooting takes place, has not had a restful night since hearing, as Pastor Sam, you said, the boom, boom of the gunshot fire. Now we have a 4- and 6-year-old witness to a fatal shooting last night across the street from Hartford Hospital. Is this our last chance through this tragedy, these tragedies, to take this as a turning point and say, we've got to get it right this time?
Yes.
And that's been true for each one of the shootings going back in our history. We keep saying this has to be the turning point. Enough is enough. Now, your question, I think, is really important in terms of looking at how. How do we talk to one another? How do we get the neighbors on Garden Street to have a safe place to talk both about their fears and their hopes? How do we get that conversation joined by folk who live in the West End or who live in West Hartford or Bloomfield? A dear friend of mine years ago, who was the senior warden at St. Monica's Church here in Hartford, Eddie Davis, Dr. Eddie Davis, and I were in a conversation group maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and I kept saying, well, how can I, who am I, to come in and say anything in the north end of Hartford? I don't live there. I'm white. I'm middle class, upper middle class. I represent a church, the Episcopal Church, that is primarily a white church. I can't have anything to say here. And Dr. Davis said, show up. Just show up. And he could have also said, shut up. Show up and listen. Drop all the filters you have and just come and be with us. Well, I think that's the invitation that we need to keep raising for, again, the folk of the West End and our neighbors in the suburbs. We're not going to get any further along with a sense that we are in this together until we are in it together. And this is where relationships with churches especially can start breaking down those barriers. Just a shout out to a group at Asylum Hill Congregational Church, which is called Step Up, Step Out. And they have indeed shown up over and over and over again to listen, to witness, and to build community.
And it is our responsibility as broadcasters. Dan knows it. I know it. And this is what this industry, as far as I'm concerned, has failed. Oh, they're out covering the killings. They're out doing this. They flash it on the news. But I'm talking about what we're talking about today. They're not doing this. And we've got to be part of what you're doing so that we can motivate folks from the suburbs to understand some of the problems that we have in the cities.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Part of the real tragedy with Keon's death is that there were a lot of people and a lot of organizations who were involved with him. And they're feeling the tremendous grief and the sense that they have failed. Now, in an objective way, that may be true. But in a subjective way, they have been putting their energy into trying to make change here in Hartford. Dean Jones is a good example of that, mentor for Keon, the work at the Y, the basketball team, and Carl Hedridge. All have been focused on that. We need to support that kind of effort and figure out ways to help them move through the tragedy and the sense of just the day-to-day grind of doing this work.
Bishop, we're coming up on the top of the hour. We're going to break for news.